program is a pretty simple program. We're going to make a siyum on Seder Nashim, followed by the siyum. I'll just say a few quick words of thanks and of introduction, and then we will turn the floor over to Rav Feldman Shlita to deliver the shiur for the evening. Seder Nashim, the last Masechta in Seder Nashim, is Maseches Kiddushin, which we finished in the Daf Yomi this morning, so this is the perfect timing for the siyum right between Kiddushin and Baba Kama, which the Daf Yomi starts. Be'ezus Hashem, tomorrow morning, I'll see you all there at 6:15 a.m., not 6:16, 6:15 a.m., we'll start sharp. Be'ezus Hashem, I'll just read the last Gemara in Maseches Kiddushin. The last Mishnah doesn't really talk about Kiddushin, the last Perek talks about Yichus in general, and then the last Mishnah, and then we talk about Yichud, and then the last Mishnah starts talking about professions, different professions that a good Jewish boy should go into, and professions that a good Jewish boy should avoid. So the very last piece of Gemara is really almost an exact repeat of what it says in the Mishnah, a few words of difference here and there, but the last Gemara just tells us, Rabbi Nurai Omer, Maniach Ani Kolom L'Shabalim, Rabbi Nurai says, I am leaving aside all the other professions in the world, Ve'eni Melamides B'ni Ela Torah, and I'm only going to teach my son Torah. Why is it that I'm only going to teach my son Torah? She'kolom L'Shabalim Eino Medeslo Ela B'Yimei Yaldusso, all other professions in the world are going to be there for him in his youth, when he is young, Avol b'yemei ziknuso, harehu mutal b'ra'av. But when he's old, he could go hungry because he's no longer going to be able to perform at his chosen profession to the extent that he was able to with the precision that he was able to when he was younger, and therefore he's gonna go hungry. Avol Torah ain't a king, but Torah is fundamentally different. Omedes lo la'adam be'is yalduso, v'nosenes lo achris v'tikva be'is zuknuso. It's there for him when he's young, and it's going to give him hope, and it's going to give him a future, even in his old age. We often don't think of old people as talking about their future, but it's going to give him even a future in his old age, because obviously this is something that's not only going to earn him chaye olam hazeh, but chaye olam haba as well. The Brisk Rav famously points out that it seems like a bit of an issue in the Mishnah, because Rabbi Meir had said in the Mishnah, la'olam yilamid adam espino, umnis nikia v'kala. A person should teach a son an easy and clean profession. And then you have Rabbi Nurai saying, I'm not going to teach anything, only Torah. And the Gemara, I believe in Erevin, tells us that Rabbi Nurai and Rabbi Meir are the same person. So it's a little bit difficult that Rabbi Meir is suggesting which profession to teach your child, and then Rabbi Nurai says, don't teach your child any profession. I'm only going to teach my child Torah. Perhaps one can suggest, and obviously many answers are suggested to this question, that Rabbi Nurai is not making a halachic statement when he said, Eini melamed es b'ni ela Torah, that maniach ani kolom l'shava olam. Rabbi Nurai is well aware of father's obligation, which we discussed earlier in the Masechta, to teach a child a trade. He's very well aware of that, and he's cognizant of it, and he also knows that he could hire someone else to do that. But if there's going to be one thing that I'm going to make sure to be melamed es b'ni, that I'm going to, there's one message that I want to convey to my child, one value that I want to convey to my child, it's the value of Talmud Torah. And therefore, maniach ani, I'll set aside kolom l'shava olam, any other profession, and let other people teach him that. But eini melamed es b'ni ela Torah. I'm going to make sure that my child knows that my core value is Torah. And whatever other profession he does in his life, it's a halach in Shulchan Aruch to make Torascha keva u'malachtecha arai. The Gemara says, but halach in Shulchan Aruch, that one has to make his Torah that which is his rock, his anchor during the day. And the malacha is what he does in order to put food on the table. So therefore, Rabbi Nurai says, that's what I want to teach my child. That's going to be ultimately what's going to be his legacy and what is the legacy that he's going to pass on to his children. Be'es yalduso ma'omer v'kavei Hashem yachlifu koach yalu evrikan sharin v'be'es v'zuknuso ma'omer od yinuvin b'seva d'shein v'ananim yiyu hajnu lachasar yuchzin slikala meseches kedushin Hajrulach Sedanashim Mahajakalan, Daitanlach Sedanashim Daitakalan, Lanish Seminach Sedanashim Lassish Minan, Loba Almadin Valba Almadasi, Hajrulach Sedanashim Mahajakalan, Daitanlach Sedanashim Daitakalan, Lanish Seminach Sedanashim Lassish Minan, Loba Almadin Valba Almadasi, Hajrulach Sedanashim Mahajakalan, Daitanlach Sedanashim Daitakalan, Lanish Seminach Sedanashim Lassish Minan, Loba Almadin Valba Almadasi, Rasam of Nakhadanelo Henvalo Senu, Shate So Rascha Umanasenu Balamaze, Usei Manul Alamaba, Hanina Bar Papa, Rami Bar Papa, Nachman Bar Papa, Achai Bar Papa, Abamari Bar Papa, Rafram Bar Papa, Rachish Bar Papa, Surcha Bar Papa, Ada Bar Papa, Doru Bar Papa. Ha'arivna Adonai Eloheinu es divrei Sorascha befinu uvefifi os amcha beis Yisrael v'niya kolanu anachnu v'tzatzeinu v'tzatzei amcha beis Yisrael kolanu yodei shemecha v'lomdei sorasecha. Me'oi v'aytechakmeni mitzvasecha ki liolam hili yihili b'yisam b'chukach l'man lo evosh. Lo'olam lo eshkach p'chudecha kivamcha yisani v'ruch ata Adonai l'amdeni chukecha. Amen, 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 selah v'ed. Modem anachnu lefnach Adonai Eloheinu v'lo yavseinu, shesamta chalkeinu miyoshvei beis hamidrash, shesamta chalkeinu miyoshvei kranos. Sh'anu mashkimim v'heim mashkimim. Anu mashkimim l'divrei Torah, v'heim mashkimim l'dvarim v'teilim. Anu amelim v'heim amelim. Anu amelim makablim sachar, v'heim amelim v'einam makablim sachar. Anu ratzim v'heim ratzim. Anu ratzim l'chayelim abba, v'heim ratzim l'varshacha, sh'nemra v'ata l'him toridim l'varshacha, san she dom mirma, l'yechzi yimeyam v'aniyav tachbach. Yirutzam l'fenach Adonai Elohai, k'shem shazatanu l'sayim m'sachs kidushin, k'en tazreinu l'haskil m'sachtos l'sfarim acherim, u'l'sayimu m'lilmod l'lamed, l'ishma v'lasos, l'kayim es kulder v'salam t'arzach b'yava, l'zchus kalatanam v'amram es amidicham yama l'anu l'zareinu shlo yom shatara, m'pi umpi zareinu v'zare zareinu ad olam. Kaim bi besalecha tancha osach b'shapcha tishmar alecha v'akitzosa hi sesichecha ki vi yirbu yamecha v'yosif olcha shnos chayim orich yamim b'yamina b'smola osha v'chavad Adonai oz yamo yitain Adonai v'arech samo v'ashalom Yiskadal v'yiskadash shmei rabba v'yomadu hu asu l'yiskadaso l'achim esayo l'asak l'chay alma l'me v'nekart adi ushleim ushachlel heichalei b'gav heil mekro pulchan nukhra me'ara l'asav pulchan adi shmei l'asvei v'yamil chuchu bruchu b'malchuse v'ikarei v'chayechon v'yamechon v'chay d'chol b'yis Yisrael b'agol av zman krivim ramein Yehei shmei rabba mivarach li'alam l'omei olmaya yisparach v'yishtabach v'yisparach v'yisrom ha'misnasei v'yisador v'yisal Salal, Shmedu Kutchabrichu, Lelman Kabrachasa Vishirasa, Tushbachasa Vinechamasa, Damir Vyamavim Ramein, Al Yisrael Vyal Rabbanon, Vyal Talmideon, Valkol Talmide Salmideon, Vyalkol Mando Askin Varaisa, Divasa Aden Vidibachala Sarvasar, Yehilon Lukhan Shlom Rabbachina Vichista, Virachme Vichaye, Riche, Muzoni Vichi, for Konam in Kodamavun, Divishmaya Varavim Ramein, Yeshlam Rabbim Shmaya Vachim Tov Malin Valko Yisrael Vim Ramein. Oseh shalom b'mamav, v'yaseh shalom aleinu v'al kol Yisrael v'imronen. Mazel tov to everyone who was mesayim, and hatzlacha rabba to everybody who's going to be beginning Maseches Bava Kama Be'ez Hashem tomorrow. And I just want to say a few quick thank yous to the Mishra and the Etra family, as well as an anonymous family, for sponsoring tonight's shir and tonight's siyum. I want to thank publicly Alicia Graf, who was unable to, had a conflict tonight, was unable to be here tonight, but Seder Nashim doesn't get learnt in BKNW without Alicia Graf on two levels. First, most importantly, that he's here every single day at 6:14, like clockwork, and also that whenever I'm gone, which has been more frequently lately, with more frequent travel, Alicia very graciously says the shir quite expertly, and I want to thank him for that. And of course, to thank all of those who come to the Daf Yomi shir regularly, and those who stop in from around the world. People are in the New York area. Every once in a while, we have surprise drop-ins, and we appreciate that as well. Also want to thank the Torah committee that's doing a tremendous amount of great work in bringing more Talmud Torah events to our shul, similar to tonight's event, and they should be zochet to continue to do that, and we should continue to benefit from that Torah learning. Just by way of quick introduction, Rabbi Feldman probably does not want a long introduction, especially since I'm taking away from his time, but a very quick introduction. Last year, Yeshiva University had a siyum on Seder Moed for the Daf Yomi in Yeshiva. And because my shir is one of the many Daf Yomi shirim online on the YU Torah website, so they asked me to come and say a few words. And they asked Rabbi Feldman to give a shir as well, to give an overview of Seder Nashim and what it's really all about. And anyone who is there, or if you've seen it, if you've heard it or seen it, I think it's video up online as well, it was mind-blowing to hear a person essentially summarize an entire Seder of Shas with Perush, with explanation that links and weaves a theme through the entire Seder, is something that not many people walking on planet Earth are able to do, and Rabbi Feldman is able to do seemingly with ease. Now, Rabbi Feldman is no stranger to people here, certainly people who've been paying attention. His Torah has been taught here and learned here throughout the years, many, many times, through his Svarim, that I've certainly relied on heavily to prepare a number of shiurim, both his Hebrew Svarim, his three Hebrew Svarim, which I have at home. I don't think we have the three English Svarim we have in Shul, and they are each one is better than the next. And if you haven't taken advantage of them, I strongly encourage you to do so. When I was in yeshiva, Rabbi Feldman was already a legend to, if I'm allowed to say, the younger guys like me. He couldn't tell probably that he's a little older than me, but he's a little older than me. So the younger chevra like me, he was already the legend. We would listen as Moreinu v'Rabbeinu, Rav Shechter would marvel at Rav Feldman's Bekiyus, even at that age. And I have to tell you, over the years, as amazing as that is, and as obvious as that is to everybody, I am more amazed by his humility, his Midos Tovos, his Sfarim, his English Sfarim, focus on Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. And you rarely have a person that practices what he preaches as expertly as Rav Feldman does. And he treats everyone like an equal, even though we are so clearly not his equal. It is a very, very great kavod to ask Rabbi Feldman to give a shir to us this evening.
Thank you, Rabbi Leibowitz, for that way too generous introduction. One thing was true, it was too long. Definitely, in a way, undeserved, but it really is a tremendous honor to be here. In my non-scientific sense, I think this is the most listened to Daf Yomi Shir in the world. You know that people are clicking in and listening to this Shir from all over, and it's wonderful to actually see where it takes place and to be able to celebrate with you, because this is really a true simcha. You know that those who learned Daf Yomi in this Shir learned it well, got it in a very expert sense. You're really all tremendously fortunate, and it's really a phenomenal experience to hear Rabbi Leibowitz give shiur on anything, and to be able to celebrate with you and to know this is the real thing, this is the real deal, this is the real Daf Yomi group. It's a tremendous privilege for me, and thank you very much for having me here. And the kind words were too much, but to have me here is a very wonderful privilege. And as Rabbi Leibowitz pointed out, we did have an opportunity to celebrate the last Daf Yomi Siyum together about a year and a half ago, and just to mention a word or two from that introduction, which you also too generously described, but we did try to note a certain theme within Nashim, that Seder Nashim essentially tells us how to be a family, that we go through Yevamos, which tells us what it means to be related, and then to Ksubis, which means tells us how to form a marriage, how to commit to each other and how to take on the responsibility of a spouse, and then Nedarim, which tells us how we balance our own personal needs for growth against the risk of separating from others, the tension that we find within the Masechta, and then Nazir and Sota are there also in order to show us the risks of not watching one's own balance and how that is sometimes necessary to take steps to protect. And then Gittin and Kiddushin, which finally are about creating the marriage unit, first with Gittin in order to warn us of how fragile that marriage unit could be and what the risks are, so we have that together in our mind before we then enter into Kiddushin, which essentially is how we commit to another, to one other, through an expression of seriousness, through the Gemiras Das of the Kinyan Kiddushin, and we create that bond through that commitment. And then we find out, finally, in the end of the Seder, in the beginning of the second parak, that all of that is an extension of that basic concept of v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, the obligation that we have to love the one closest to us, to love our spouse, is that same mitzvah that we have towards all of us, v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, in its most intense form. So that, I think, is the theme that we counter in Seder Nashim as we go into Seder Nezikin, So we now expand to what it means to create a society, what it means to create a Jewish society, and to interlock with each other in that way. And that also has very similar principles, but applied in a broader sense as those which we saw in Seder Nashim. And I thought for tonight, what we would talk about, since we're starting Bava Kamma tomorrow, a sugya that is crucial to Bava Kamma without actually appearing in Bava Kamma. Basically, it's the missing sugya. It's the opening theme to Bava Kamma before you actually get there. And that has to do with the Isser Mazik, the prohibition, if there is one, to damage someone's property. And I think we'll see when we explore what connects to that topic that we find many of the themes that are necessary to create the Jewish society expressed within this sugya. It's very good for representing a lot of the values that the Seder as a whole will end up containing through this one idea. And I think that's an appropriate place to start. So again, it is the missing sugya, so to speak. We're about to start Bava Kamma tomorrow, which is really the Nezikin. The idea of the whole Seder is called Nezikin, but Bava Kamma is the Masechta that talks about the obligation to compensate someone who has been affected by your carelessness or by your intentional wanton destructiveness. If you have broken something of someone else's, if you've been mazik someone's property, so we know the Torah tells us in Parshas Mishpatim that we're obligated to compensate that individual. There are arba avos nezikin that are described at first in the Mishnah that we'll start tomorrow, and these are based on psukim. The Torah essentially tells us more or less clearly that we have this responsibility to pay for the damage that we have inflicted on people's property. But what's not as clear, and what prompts the question is there a prohibition to do that? Is it usur to damage someone's property? And if so, how do we know that? Because we don't find that so explicitly in these psukim and parashas mishpatim, which tell us about the obligation to make this compensation, to pay for what we've done. So is it the case, and if so, how do we know it, that it's usur to do it in the first place? What would happen, for example, if I would come up to your car with a sledgehammer in one hand and a checkbook in the other hand, and I say, I'm about to smash your windshield, and I'm ready to pay for it. So here, I'm going to break your windshield. Here's a check already written out. It's going to cover the whole cost. So I have done my obligation as far as paying for the damage that I have inflicted. Is it usur to do that? Is it prohibited? Even though I paid for it, did I commit an avera? So we would assume, yes. Doesn't seem like a nice Jewish thing to do, as we'll see in some greater detail. But it's not obvious how you know that. It's not obvious where in the Torah we're told that that's not permissible. No, the Torah tells us I have to pay for Adam Amazik, I have to compensate for the damage that I caused. But how do you know that you're not allowed to do it in the first place? So could one entertain for a moment the thought that there actually isn't a source, that it's actually permitted, that if you're ready to pay, that's all you have to do? You can go around releasing your aggression all day, breaking everyone's windshields and coming and covering the cost, and that's fine. There's no prohibition involved. So that's hard to believe. It's unlikely that that's the case. And in fact, we could find enough sources that tell us that it is indeed prohibited. The Rambam in Mishneh Torah is pretty clear about this in Hilchos Nizkei Mamon, that it's prohibited to be mazik someone's property. The Ramban in his comments to Parshas Vayishlach, when he talks about all of the concepts that are included within Choshen Mishpat, all of the dinim of civil law, refers to a prohibition of being mazik someone's property. And the Rambam, again, in Hilchos Tshuva, talks about the obligation to do tshuva for an act of hezek. And he writes there that if you have damaged someone's property, if you want to be free of that, you have to pay for the damage and ask for mechila. It's not enough just to cover the cost. There is an offense. There is an avera that you're going to need mechila for. So it's clear from a lot of the Rishonim that they are certainly working off the assumption that there is an avera here, not just an obligation to compensate, but a prohibition as well. And we can find that perhaps directly and indirectly from a few sources. So we want to try to connect the end of one Seder to the beginning of the next Seder. So two of the places where you find it are the end of Kiddushin and the beginning of Bava Kamma. So you may recall about 5 weeks ago on Daf Membeis in Kiddushin was the sugya of Shliach L'Dvar Aveira, Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira. And one of the examples the Gemara gives, if you give someone a mission, if you give somebody a torch and you send him on a job to go set fire to something. So in that context, the Gemara talks about Shlichus L'Dvar Aveira, apparently assuming that that is a Dvar Aveira, that setting fire to something, doing an act of Hezek, is itself an Aveira, and we could then get into the conversation of when Shlichus does or does not work. And another source would be from tomorrow's daf, so this is certainly to get us in that framework. So it's a little bit of a complicated discussion, so it's good to get a head start now. On daf Beis and the Beis, you'll see tomorrow morning, I'm sure you'll hear it masterfully explained, that there is a discussion, the Gemara wants to try to figure out what exactly is included within the notion of a shor mu'ud. And if you have a shor that has been established as a dangerous, damaging shor, so that is a shor mu'ud, you have to pay full damages. And if the shor has not been established in that category, so it's called a shor tam. It's a simple shor who only has to pay, or the owner only has to pay half damages. So the Gemara tries to figure out, when we talk about the ox goring, so how exactly does he gore? So does he have the horn that has been separated from his body and he's holding it with his teeth, which would be an unusual way of doing things? Or are we talking about whether it's attached or detached? So the Gemara has this question. The Gemara says, in the context of it being attached, maybe one would say, Ema kula mu'edes. Maybe we should say that in that situation, we don't know what din applies. We'll say that it should be treated as mu'ad. It should be treated with a higher standard of payment. So the Rashba, very often quoted Rashba, has a comment there. Now, why is the Gemara assuming that if we're not sure what the story is in that case, we should go l'chumra? We should do the higher standard of payment. Basically, what we're dealing with here is a mominous question. We're saying if somebody is responsible for this damage, he's going to have to pay. And we want to know, how much does he have to pay? So normally the rule is, when we're trying to figure out how much someone has to pay, we say, Hamotzi michavero olav haraya, that somebody is trying to get money out of him, he has the burden of proof, which translates to a principle of safek mamono lakula. If you're not sure if you have to pay money, then you have the upper hand. You don't have to pay, we're lenient. So ask the Rashba, why is it that the Gemara is assuming we should apply the higher standard of mu'ad to this case? Let's say it's a tam then. Let's take the lower standard and say the burden of proof is on whoever would try to make this owner pay. So the Rashba has somewhat of a mysterious statement, and he says that in this context of Nezikin, we don't look at it like a safek mamon, but rather we look at it as a safek iser. Apparently assuming, once again, that there is a prohibition here. The question is, it's a safek iser min ha-Torah, so therefore we should come at it with an attitude l'chumra, and that again takes this assumption apparently that there is an iser, and we have to figure out just what that iser is. And similarly, we find also that in Shulchan Aruch, in Choshen Mishkot, in Simen Lamed Aleph, in the Torah, if you look in the commentaries like the Bach, they quote from the Mordechai and others that there's an assumption that somebody who is mazik other people's property is pasul eidus, has committed an avera that disqualifies him from eidus. As others point out, even if he had planned to pay it back, he still has done something disqualifying. There clearly seems to be an assumption throughout that there is an avera. We just have to figure out what it is. Okay, so far so good. So we can establish that it's very likely that there is a prohibition involved in being mazik somebody's property, even when you're ready to cover the costs. And we just have to figure out, where in the Torah does that iser come from? So the Stipler has an essay about this in his first piece in the Sefer Bava Kamma, in Siman Aleph in Bava Kamma. And he says at the beginning, he says right away, I'll tell you what it isn't. You want to know what's not a good answer? Baal Tashchis. Baal Tashchis doesn't work. He says for two reasons. One reason is that Baal Tashchis applies to your own stuff also. I'm not allowed to waste unnecessarily your property. I'm not allowed to destroy and waste my property. It doesn't distinguish between whose property it is, as we would find if we're talking about Nezikin. And he adds also that Baal Tashchis is sometimes mutter. It's a whole discussion itself. If you can get more value out of destroying the item than keeping it, so then Baal Tashchis is going to be mutter. So if that was the basis for the Isser, then you'd say, okay, if I get more value out of destroying your stuff, I should be allowed to do it. It's a hard conclusion to come to. So that's the Stipler's opening premise. What he actually does like, we'll come back to later, to use a terminology from today, Hadron Alach Stipler, we'll come back to him later as far as what he does like. But just to think for a moment about his rejection of Baal Tashchis as a possibility, I wonder if it's possible to keep that alive as a possibility. That what we're talking about here is we're saying, okay, you're paying for the damage. So we want to know, if you're covering all the costs, why is it still wrong to destroy this item? So it doesn't seem so crazy to say that Baal Tashchis is involved, and the fact that it applies to your own material also, okay, fine. So if I destroy my own things, I'm in violation of Baal Tashchis. But we won't talk about Tashulman because there's nobody to pay back. But if I destroy your stuff, so then I'm in violation of Baal Tashchis, and I have to pay. So it doesn't seem like such a problematic position to take, theoretically. One could also note that if you look in the Sefer Achinuch, the mitzvah of Baal Tashchis, Tavkuf Chav Tes, so there he describes that Baal Tashchis is wrong for midos reasons, that essentially God doesn't want us to be dovek b'hashchasa. We shouldn't cleave to destructiveness, like we said before. It's not a nice Jewish thing to do, to go around destroying things. It's a bad quality. So that's not such a far-off theory to say that this is wrong because you are wantonly destroying things. And it's not so different from what the Rush says. The Rush in his Chuvus in Simon Kovches notes that the Isser involved in Hezek is the concept of Derachei Adarcheinu. It's not a pasuk in Chumash, a pasuk in Midivrei Kabbalah, that we, as nice Jewish people, should act in a pleasant fashion, and we shouldn't go around destroying things. So I don't know if that's so different from Baal Tashchis, the way the Sefer Achinuch is saying it, that we're supposed to act pleasantly, we're not supposed to act destructively. So if we're going to go around smashing windshields, so even if we pay for them, we're doing something wrong, we're committing an aveira. And if we smash our own windshields, we're still committing an aveira. And if we smash someone else's windshield, we're doing that aveira, plus we have to pay them. I don't know if it's such a terrible theory, but okay, so that's the Stipler doesn't like it. And it's probably not what the Rambam and others are working off of, because that wouldn't be an avera b'adam l'chavero specifically. It wouldn't necessarily require you to ask mechila from the person who you imposed this on if you did cover all their costs. So, okay, it's probably not their source, whether it's a relevant source or not, but it's probably not the source that a lot of the other Rishonim were working off of. So there is a source which many Achronim point to, including the Stipler, and that is Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah in his commentary to Pirkei Avos. Pirkei Avos is a very important part of Nezikin, but it doesn't get too much attention from the Daf Yomi. So we're lucky that this time of year, Pirkei Avos gets attention for other reasons, so it deserves an honorable mention as we start Nezikin. So if you start Pirkei Avos from the very beginning, the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Moshe Kibbol Torah Misinai, so Rabbeinu Yonah has a comment over there in his second Dibra Maschil Moshe, where he says that one who is mazik someone's property is in violation of lo sigzol. This is an act of gezela. It's an act of theft, of depriving somebody of their money, and that would seem to be a possible suggestion. So that's a notion that the Stipler quotes, and many others like this as well. I wonder if it totally answers the question, because one could argue that Rabbeinu Yonah is not necessarily addressing the situation. Maybe he's saying that if you cost somebody money, if you impose a loss on somebody and you don't pay for it, so you leave somebody with less net worth because you damage their property, so then that's gezeila. But if you're ready to cover the cost, if you do that at the same time, you immediately pay them all the costs, so is it so clear from Rabbeinu Yonah that that's still a violation of lo sigzol? I'm not sure. Maybe. But it seems to be that the focus is probably on the fact that you are inflicting a loss on someone else. It's also noteworthy that it's hard to know how much to read into this Rabbeinu Yonah, because Rabbeinu Yonah's whole point, the reason he has it on this first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, is because he's saying, the Mishnah tells us, Moshe Kibbol Torah Misinai, we got the Torah through transmission from Moshe, and we're very lucky that we had a teacher like Moshe, because there's a lot we wouldn't know from just reading the Chumash itself. And he says, for example, we wouldn't know that when the Torah says, Lo Sigzol, it also includes Nezikin. So it's hard to know what exactly are the parameters, how Rabbi Yona knows this, but this is the assumption. Presumably it has to do with the fact that you're causing a loss to someone. So maybe it doesn't necessarily extend to if you're actually covering the cost. There is a discussion, it's clearly a chiddush here, because one could also have said that maybe gezeila means that I'm taking something for myself. The fact that I am causing you a loss, if I'm not actually walking away with anything, it's not so obvious that's gezeila. That's a chiddush. It's a chiddush probably a lot of other Rishonim agreed with too. The Gemara in Bava Metzia on Daf Mem Beis sounds like that. Sounds like, as the store says, if you break it, you bought it. So that you break it, that makes you into a gazlan. It makes you into the owner, whether you walk away with it or not. It's a machlokus between the Ksos and the Nesivis, how to read that Gemara. But the Nesivis and Reb Chaim and the Chazanish, many understood that it is telling you that there is a concept of gezeila involved when there is a hezek, even if you don't end up getting anything for yourself, but you're causing a loss of money to the other party, that's still considered to be gezeila. So it's an interesting discussion. It's not clear whether or not it answers the question. You might say, well, it does answer the question, because we know that there's an isser of geneva almanas l'shalim, that even if I steal something with the intent to give it back or the intent to pay for it, so the Gemara is going to tell us in Bava Metzia in about 5-6 months that it's aser also. So you might say, okay, so if nezek involves gezel, so then it should be aser even if I'm ready to pay for it. Maybe we could build that onto Rabbeinu Yoma. Maybe. But maybe not. It's not clear that Gezel and Geneva are the same for this purpose. The Bach, for one, distinguishes between the two. And that Reb Chaim, for example, Reb Chaim defined Gezel as opposed to Geneva, that Gezel is causing somebody to lose money, is taking away from their bank account. And Geneva is that plus. You're taking away their money, and you're acting in a sneaky fashion. You're fooling them, you're deceiving them while you're doing it. So one could understand that Geneva al Manas l'Shalim is a problem, because even though you are giving them back their money, you're not actually costing them anything, but you're acting in a sneaky fashion, and that's the source of the issue. So the Bach, with a slightly different reasoning, the Bach says that when it comes to Gezel, maybe you don't have a prohibition. So maybe if you're not actually leaving him at the end of the day with any different bank account, who knows whether or not Gezel is going to be prohibited al Manas to pay back, and whether Mazik also. It's not clear whether Rabbeinu Yona addresses our specific question enough. That maybe it's enough of a chiddush to say that mazik in the normal sense involves gezel. Does this answer the question of what happens if you're paying it back at the same time? Unclear, perhaps. So there is another idea, as we mentioned, the last theme that we saw in Seder Nashim, that passes on to here as well. And that is our old favorite of Yahav Talarecha Kamocha, called Gadol B'Torah, that Rabbi Akiva taught us, that we focus on during Sfiras Omer as well. So the whole idea of Yahav Talarecha Kamocha, as beautiful a notion as it sounds, is a very tricky topic in the Rishonim. Because the Rishonim try to figure out, how could it be that Yahav Talarecha Kamocha is a positive mitzvah? What do you mean? It's a beautiful positive mitzvah. Yeah, but the Torah says, kamocha, that you have to accomplish this mitzvah towards others to the same degree that you do to yourself. So the Rishonim, the Ramban, others struggle with this, because how can you fulfill any affirmative obligation towards even one person the same way you do it for yourself? You don't have that many hours in the day, you don't have that much money to work on behalf of even one person to the same degree as you do for yourself. So it's hard to understand what kamocha means if it's a positive mitzvah. So many suggest that, like Hillel in the Gemara Masechet Shabbos, reformulates it in the negative, Madalach Sani Lachavercha Lo Savid, that which is hateful to you, you shouldn't do to others. So it's a little bit easier to work with then, to say that what the Torah is really telling us is, don't do bad things to others that you would not want done to yourself. So that should be the yardstick. If you wouldn't want people doing this to you, you shouldn't do it for yourself. So many perceive this as an isser. So there are a number of activities which Poskim have pointed to as being prohibited because of V'yahav t'l'reicha kamocha. Last night I was on a panel talking about issues of surveillance and eavesdropping. So that's one of them that you find much in the literature, that if you eavesdrop on people's conversations, if you're going to tap somebody's phone, so then you'd be in violation of all kinds of yisurim, including V'yahav t'l'reicha kamocha. That's one of the activities that we assume we could figure out, even if we had no other makoros, it would be a bittul of V'yahav t'l'reicha kamocha. So too, The Yad Rama, in his commentary, notes that there is a Isser of Yahav Tarecha Kamocha that's relevant. And you find also that the Yamshel Shlomo and Bava Kama says that as well, that one who's mazik somebody's property is in violation of Yahav Tarecha Kamocha. Rav Kook, in his Tshuvas Aruch Mishpat, has a very interesting tshuva about this, where he talks about the idea of Hezek Sheino Nikar, where if you inflict damage on somebody in a way that is not visible, so then it's hard to be mechayiv somebody to pay for that. So Rav Kook has a tshuva in which he explains that it's still prohibited anyway, because you wouldn't want somebody to impose damage on your stuff, even if it's not visible. So too, you wouldn't want to have that done to you. You shouldn't do it to others. You shouldn't be mazik somebody even in ways that don't fit into the normal chiyuvim of nezikin. That's also included in this notion of v'yahav t'lareicha kamocha and is prohibited for that reason. Okay, so we have this idea that some of the Rishonim are invoking, that in some of the later Svarim as well, that v'yahav t'lareicha kamocha might be the source. The Yad Rama, when he says that, he also adds another possibility, that maybe it's lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. Now, when we talk about lifnei iver lo sitein michshol, so we're used to talking about it in the more elaborate applications, it more often comes up in the case of causing somebody to sin, helping somebody to do an avera, or perhaps giving somebody bad advice. Those are the additional interpretations that we find in Chazal. But literally, the pasuk means that you shouldn't cause somebody to trip. You shouldn't put something in front of somebody when they're not aware of it, whether they're actually blind or they're not able to see what's in front of them, and they're going to trip physically. So that would seem to be a prohibition with lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. So the pasuk also means that. The Michas Chinuch, when he talks about lifnei iver, so he notes that there is a view that the pasuk doesn't mean that, it only means the interpretations that we find in Chazal of giving bad advice or helping somebody to sin. It's difficult to square with a mikra yotzim midei pshuta. He has an explanation of why you would come to such a conclusion. But pashup shot is that is included in this isser. If you cause somebody to trip, if you cause somebody to hurt themselves, so then that's a violation of lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. And the Meshech Chachma writes that if you are not possible with Neiva and Parshas Kedoshim, that if you leave something that's mazik, Bershus Arabim, that's an Isser with Neiva. If you leave it in your household, in your private house, that's an Isser of Losasim Domim Bevesacha. So that idea is similar to something that you find in a fascinating tshuva of the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer and his tshuvas in Yeradalit, in Yeraday, in Siman Reish Mem Aleph. So he has a tshuva in which he suggests that the idea is that the Torah, when it gave us the Chiyuvei Nezikin that we read about in Parshas Mishpatim, so what happened there is that the Torah is basically trying to make sure we don't hurt people. The Torah doesn't want us to have an environment in which people are at risk. People are going to trip over things, people are going to get gored by cows, people are going to, by oxen, people are going to burn themselves. We don't want people to be hurt by a dangerous environment. So says the Chassam Sofer, the Torah figured out, how do we make sure people won't have dangerous environments? People will make sure not to allow risk to surround them. If we say that if property gets damaged by things that are under your influence, that you have to pay for it, that will encourage people to create a safe environment. If they know that if they set a fire and the fire does damage, they're going to have to pay. If they let their ox run around and the ox causes problems, they're going to have to pay for it. So people will be careful with their stuff, with their dangerous property, and that will end up protecting people as well. And in that context, so he invokes the idea of Nishmartim Ba'odu Nafsha Seichem, and also Lo Samar Al Dam Re'echa, that we have a mentality that we can't be passive when people are at risk, when there is danger. So within that mentality, so the Torah then gave us the Chiyuvei Nezikin in order to make sure that we will have an environment that's not likely to harm people. It's an interesting idea, and it may also be relevant to think about it to the later part of Bava Kama. There is a parak in Bava Kama later on, which is going to talk about Chavala. So Chavala is damaging a human being, and the Torah tells us that we have chiyuvim that come with chavala, five different forms of compensation or penalty if you inflict harm on a human being. And there's a whole discussion what that's about. Rav Gustman and his shiurim, the Kontraste shiurim to Bava Kamma. So he has a whole discussion about this idea of compensation for Chavalah. And he asks, is it the same thing as Teshlum and Nezikin, just applied to people, or is it a whole different concept? And he favors the idea that it's not the same thing as Teshlum and Nezikin, it's a whole different concept. And among the points that he mentions is that Nezikin is for compensating somebody whose property has been damaged, and your body is not your property. You're not free to do whatever you want with your body, so we can't just transfer one concept to the other. So presumably, Chavala is a whole different concept. He has other proofs as well. Presumably Chavala is a whole different concept. It's not the same thing as Nezikin in a different environment. So that could be true. He has a lot of proofs to this, but maybe it does share this idea that maybe the Chassam Sofer's idea could be applied there as well, that the Torah is basically saying that if you act in a dangerous way, if you do things that end up causing harm to people, so we're going to make you pay, we're going to impose all kinds of compensation and penalties on you, and therefore you're going to be more careful, you're going to be less violent, you're going to make sure to control your temper and to watch what you're doing. And that all of that is perhaps within the same kind of notion that the Chassam Sofer is describing, that the Torah is creating a safe environment for people with these various chiyuvim, these various monetary obligations, whether it's Nezikin, whether it's Chavala, maybe they are perhaps related in that sense. So it's interesting that the Chassam Sofer invoked the pasuk of Lo Samer Al Dam Re'echa. That pasuk has also been invoked in this context in a different way. Rav Soloveitchik in the Sora Journal, there's an essay there in the name of Rav Soloveitchik, where he suggests that the Isser of Nezikin is based on the pasuk of Lo Samer Al Dam Re'echa, but in a different way than the Chassam Sofer was saying it, in a very different way, that if you look in the Sefer HaMitzvahs of the Rambam, when he talks about what the mitzvah of Lo Samer Al Dam Re'echa is, so one might think that literally translated means that don't stand idly by your brother's blood. Sounds like it means if somebody is killing someone else, then you have to get involved and you have to stop it. But if you look at the way the Rambam describes this in Sefer HaMitzvahs, you see that it's more expansive. That first of all, it's not just killing, it's any degree of harm. It could be a lesser degree of harm as well. But also, it's not just physical damage, it's material damage as well. Just like we know that dam can mean blood, damim can also mean money and property. So if somebody is imposing a risk on somebody else, whether it's physical or material, to whatever degree it is, we are not allowed to stand by, we have to stop it. So said the Rav, here if somebody is harming somebody else's property, if you see somebody else about to smash somebody's windshield, so you're obligated to stop them. So it can't be that you are allowed to do it. You have to stop the other guy and then you can do it yourself. That doesn't make much sense. Seems to be a straight Kal Vachomer that essentially if you have the obligation to protect somebody's property from somebody else doing that, so then certainly you're not allowed to be the one to do it, and that would seem to follow from that perspective. So that's actually very similar. It's a different pasuk, but it's very similar to what the Stipler does like. The Stipler, in his Sefer that we mentioned before, in the first essay in Bava Kamma, so he has a similar svara from a different idea, that he thinks this is essentially a outgrowth of the idea of Hashavas Aveda, that we know that when it comes to lost property, so if we find somebody's lost property, we're obligated to return it to them. And it doesn't just mean that it's lost and they don't know where it is, but we know from Gemaras that it means also if it is being eroded, if it's being destroyed, and you can stop the property from being destroyed, so then that's also included in Hashavas Aveda. So there again, it's very similar logic. It seems to be a Kal Vachomer that if I'm obligated to rescue somebody's property, so then I should also be prohibited to be the one endangering someone's property. That seems to be a straight line. And he then goes to prove the point a little bit more in an interesting way, where he says that you might think, okay, but does this necessarily correlate to our issue of where you're ready to pay for it? Maybe it means that if you let somebody's property get destroyed, so then you're letting them have a monetary loss. But if you're going to pay for it, so then maybe we don't have an idea of Hashavas Aveda. So he proves that that's not the case, because there's a Tosus in Bava Metzia, on Daf Lamed Aleph Mudbeis, where Tosus talks about an earlier Gemara, that the Gemara says that if you, let's say, you want to return somebody's lost property, but it's going to cost you money because you have to take time off of work. You're going to lose wages in order to take care of this. So if that's going to happen, so then the person has to pay you back to compensate you for the lost wages. So what if your wages, you're a high salary person, so it's going to cost you more in lost wages than the item is worth, so it's not going to be kedai for you to have him pay you all these lost wages, and it's going to be more than the item that you're returning to him. So Tostus asks, so it sounds like that this wouldn't apply, this excuse wouldn't apply if it's equal. What if it's the exact same amount? What if you get paid $50 an hour and somebody lost a $50 item and it's going to take you an hour to return it? So it sounds like you have to do that. So what's the point? So you're going to return his $50 item and he's right away going to have to give you $50 in order to compensate you. So he's not getting anything, but apparently you have to do it anyway. And Tostus has an explanation why, based on another Gemara, why it makes sense to do that. It's a little bit evocative of an idea the psychologists have discussed called loss aversion, that we tend to value things more once we already have them. That they do studies that people are willing to pay a certain amount for an object they don't have, and once they have it, they're not willing to give it up for that amount. They need more to give it up, that they overvalue things they already have. So people want, apparently, their property returned, even if they're going to have to pay the same amount, the value of the property, to give it back to you to compensate you for your time, they're still going to want the property back. So says the Stipler, so then it seems to carry over that if you're going to destroy somebody's property and still pay them for it, so that's the flip side of the coin, that the same way that even though they're going to lose the value, they still want the item back. So too, the other side of that, that if they're going to get the value from you in compensation, but they're going to lose their item, presumably that's not something they want either, and that's not something you're allowed to do. So then he carries that to another step. He says, interesting, so if you had then, let's say, a Beis Din present. So let's say you were about to smash somebody's windshield, so then presumably, and pay for it, so then presumably the victim can say, I don't want that, and if there was a Beis Din here, they would stop you from doing that. So says the Stipler, anything that a Beis Din would stop you from doing, you're not allowed to do. That creates an issur on you. He says that is a extension of the idea of shoftim v'shochim. The Torah says you have to have this judicial system. That means that whatever the judicial system would tell you not to do, that's a moral obligation on you not to do, even if they're not there. So too, if they would stop you from doing this, you're not allowed to do it. So that's also an issur. So that's interesting. It's an interesting suggestion. Not everyone loved that suggestion either. So for example, Rav Nosson Gishtetner, in his Shuvas Lahoros Nosson, so he points out that this also has exceptions. The Stipler himself, if you recall, didn't like Baal Tashlis because of the exceptions that maybe it'll be more value to you to destroy someone's property. But we have exceptions within Hashavas Aveda that would seem to weaken this also. So for example, Azaki Veino Fichvodo, that if you have a person who's very dignified and returning the property would compromise his dignity, so we find he's exempt. So maybe also a person can decide that if I need to damage your property to protect my dignity, maybe I could do that too. Maybe we'll have to apply all of the exceptions of Hashavas Aveda to Nezik. He wasn't so thrilled with that. He wasn't so thrilled either with the Gra. So it was a good company. The Gra and his beer to Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat. So the Gra thought that maybe the source was Midivrei Kabbalah, that there is a Gemara in Bava Kamma, 2 months away, and Daf Samach Aleph, we're in the Perek HaKones, where the Gemara talks about a story about David HaMelech, that David HaMelech was in a situation where to save his life he would have to destroy property of others. And the Gemara asks about that, whether it's mutter lahatzil atzmo b'mamon chaveiro. Are you allowed to save yourself through destroying somebody else's property? So apparently, the premise is that you're not allowed to destroy somebody's property, maybe even at the risk of your life, which is shocking by itself, but the premise first is that you can't damage somebody's property. So the Gra says, at least you have a source, Midivrei Kabbalah. This is coming from the story in Navi. At least you have a source, Midivrei Kabbalah, that there's an Isser Lahazik. So as Rav Gishtetner points out in his Shuvas, it's a little bit difficult to use that as a source because Tosus explains over there that clearly we know that Pikuach Nefesh is Doche everything. It seems like that's agreed upon principle, that Pikuach Nefesh is Doche Gzela and monetary issues. Some discussion about this, whether it's a Gemara in Ksubas, that sounds a little different from Moshe Feinstein, as the Tshuva says. It's not even a discussion. Everyone agrees that Pikuach Nefesh outweighs issues of Gezel and the like. So the question is, when the Gemara discusses it, it says, okay, he's going to do it for Pikuach Nefesh. The question is, does he have to pay afterwards? Do we say that, okay, because he had to do this to save his life, he's exempt from Tashlumin? Or do we say that, no, that he had to save his life, but he still damaged somebody else's property, so he should have to pay it back? So if that's the whole discussion there, so then it's difficult to apply it to our question, where we're also talking about paying it back, so it's hard to know if that's enough of a source. So there is also a citation of Reb Chaim Brisker that can be found in the Sefer of his Talmud, Reb Baruch Ber, in the Sefer Birkas Shmuel, in Siman Beis, in Bava Kamma, where he comes from a little bit of a different direction. He says, let's maybe look more in plain sight, let's stop looking far away, that if we go back to Parshas Mishpatim, where we started, so there, the Torah talks about, for example, the shor Muad, so the language of the Torah is, Huad v'balav v'lo yishmerenu, that here it's been established to the owners of this ox that he's dangerous, and they didn't watch him, they didn't protect everyone from the ox. So that statement, said Reb Chaim, that's the Nisr essentially. That basically what the Torah is telling us is that the reason there's a Chiyuv Tashlumin is because there was a failure to watch over your property. That the Torah is basically saying that that's what has to be done. It's similar to the Chasam Sofer perhaps, but in a different way. The Torah is basically telling you in that same sentence that all of this is an extension of your failure to do what you were supposed to do, which was protect your property from damaging without your intent, and presumably Kal v'chomer, to decide to do damage on your own, would certainly be included in that type of idea. And you find others who have similar statements. So, for example, Rabbi Zalman and the Sefer Avinu Ezel, and the Levush Mordechai, I think they were brothers-in-law, they both noted the Rambam in the beginning, Hilchos Nizkei Mamon. It sounds like when he talks about the obligation to pay, he says basically that you're obligated to pay because your property did damage, and that there's a connection between the two, that since your property did damage, so therefore that's why there is a Chiyuv Nezikin, that it's all essentially one idea. So perhaps we could say, see, we're running out of time here, so just to kind of shoot to the end, so perhaps we could say that it seems like we've gone all different directions trying to find the sister, gone to Lo Sigzol, and gone to Behavsla Reacha Kamocha, and gone to Lo Samur Adam Reacha, had gone to all kinds of different places, Baal Tashchis, so one could say, why does the Torah send us on such a scavenger hunt? So maybe Baruch Be'er is right, and maybe not. Why do we have to look so far in order to find the source? Why isn't it more straightforward in the Torah? And I think probably the point is that what the Torah is conveying to us in the concept of Nezikin is that it's not really the point, that the Chiyuv Tashlumin for Nezikin is not really about the Avera. That, yes, in a Hanami, if I'm going to come and smash your windshield with a sledgehammer, so yes, I'm violating Lo Sigzol, I'm violating the Haftar Yech Kamocha, Mosam Adam Reacha, and all these other things, yes, and who knows how many other things I'm probably also violating. And Durachad Archei Noam, and the Baal Tashchis, all of that. But that's not why I'm Chayiv. That I'm Chayiv because the Torah tells me that I have a responsibility towards everyone else in society, and if I'm not fulfilling that responsibility, so that alone creates a chiyuv. Yes, there are other isurim that could also be involved, depending on how intentionally you do it, but the chiyuv tashlumin is not a function of the isur, which is different than, for example, Avasher Weishlip, and a sefer on Sefer Vayikra, I believe, has a discussion where he assumes that there must be an Isser because there wouldn't be a Chiyuv Tashlumin without an Isser. So that could be, but maybe you could say a little bit differently, that maybe there is indeed room to disconnect them and to say that there are all kinds of Isserim that could be relevant, but the Chiyuv Tashlumin doesn't come from the Isser, it comes from something more passive. And this is a point that was made by Reb Zalman Nechemya Goldberg Shlita in an essay that was published in one of the journals, where he notes that we have very unusual halachas when it comes to Nezikin. We have the idea within Nezikin that we find that Adam Mu'ad La'olam, that a person is always considered to be responsible, and the Gemara says that he's responsible for damages that he personally inflicts, even b'shogeg. This is a very strange idea. Where do you find that somebody is responsible b'shogeg? Normally somebody is not responsible for what they do b'shogeg, you're only responsible for what you do b'mezid. So apparently what the Torah is conveying here is that this isn't like every other Aveira in the Torah. It's not the Aveira that causes the liability, The liability comes from a more passive place. It comes from the fact that you're not actively trying to protect yourself from harming others, to stop yourself from harming others, and that alone is what creates the chiyuv. And if you do it on purpose, so then for sure you'll have other issues, but the chiyuv comes from that premise that you're not taking care. And he notes that, so for example, the idea that the Gemara has that even if you're asleep and you happen to toss and turn in your sleep and you break something, you could be chayiv for that. So yeah, so that's really a chiddush, because that wouldn't apply in other areas of the Torah. It says the idea is if you happen to take a nap next to a Ming vase from 1,000 years ago and you realize it's fragile, and then you realize that taking a nap there, it's very likely you're not going to be watching what you're doing and you could roll over and smash it, so then that's a lack of responsibility and you should be chayiv for that. So he notes also, there's Yerushalmi that says that if you went to sleep first and somebody put the vase there afterwards, your mamish had no responsibility at all, so then maybe that would be different and you wouldn't be liable for that, which shows that that's essentially where we're coming from. And he also notes as well that we have a concept, grama benezikin is pater, that normally when you cause something indirectly, you are exempt, but there's also an idea called garmi, which is somewhere in between, which is a little bit more of an involvement on your part, and it seems like we have a chiyuv for that greater level of involvement. The Ramban says it's a chiyuv min haTorah, the Tosfos says it's a chiyuv midrabbanan, it's a knas, but why should we be chayiv at all for anything that's not direct, anything that's causational? So he says that's a reflection of this idea as well, that we have this notion that it's not because of any aveira. If it was, then grama would be pater, shogi would be pater, and the like, but it's because of this lack of responsibility that you have that is going to cause the chiyuv, and that's going to explain all these differences. There's a lot more to say about this, but one of the ways in which you can be goreim nezek is if you keep people waiting because you're going past your time. So I'm not going to do that to anybody here, so we'll have to leave that for a future date in the broad picture of Zikin. I thank you very much for all your time, and you should fully appreciate this chus that you have to begin Seder Zikin with Leibowitz and with the whole world listening in, and that we should only be zochet to share many more simchas together. Mazel tov.